But thank you for allowing me to present today. This is a project that we started at the U.S. National Arboretum when I first got there in 2006, sort of a culmination of 8 years of work, and with my colleagues, Tim Reinhart from Poplarville. Is this better? Let me hold on to it. Tim Reinhart in Poplarville. None of this would have been popular possible without Tim's lab work, and also actually Brian Scheffler's lab in the Mid-South area for the original marker development, and then Dr. Kirkbride, one of our taxonomists. So Kynanthus is probably maybe a plant that a lot of you don't know about. This is an ornamentals talk, obviously. We don't know as much as we know about peaches. But Kynanthus is in the olive family, so I'm sure you're aware of the olive family. And Kynanthus is a large genus. It used to be a small genus, but the taxonomists have lumped a tropical genus, Linosierra, in with Kynanthus. And so we have 135 species, mainly pantropical from that genus, Linosierra. And we only have really three temperate species in the entire genus. And they were usually pulled out because they were deciduous versus the evergreens. And what you find mostly in the United States is our native. We have two species native in the United States, Kynanthus virginicus and Kynanthus pygmaeus. Pygmaeus is a questionable status. It is endemic here to Florida, and it is a federally endangered plant. But we actually have some subsequent studies later on, not in today's talk, that are looking at the genetic relationships between those two. But today's talk is on Kynanthus retusus, the Chinese fringe tree, and it's a broad distribution in East Asia, really China, and then disjunct populations in Japan, Korea, and Taiwan. And one of the reasons we're really interested in it is because it really has gained in popularity, which I'll speak to in a little bit. The olive family is quite large. It's a diverse family and a large number of important crops and ornamentals. And Kynanthus is actually in the tribe Oleae, which is obviously with the olives, and this is the members of the family that have fleshy drupes, as opposed to like Samaras, which our ash trees are in. So this group is very complicated taxonomically. It has an extensive polyphyly. Basically, the genera like olive, Cartrema, which has been pulled out of Osmanthus. It's what you may know, Gary, as Osmanthus americanus, is now Cartrema. And then Osmanthus itself and a few other genera. Very taxonomically problematic. But as a plant breeder, it's very interesting, because you start seeing where these genera sort of overlap and you start to see sort of possibilities. So they are called the fringe trees because this is a showy member of the olive family where the flower parts are in four large fleecy panicles in the late spring, early summer as the leaves unfurl. And that's hence the name fringe tree, is this white flowers. At the National Arboretum, we are one of the repositories in the National Plant Germplasm System. We are tasked with collecting, characterizing, and distributing over 200 genera of woody ornamentals. And again, as a breeder, when I started, I was interested in this genus because it was really underutilized, but it was extremely adaptable, heat and drought tolerant. And in my travels, and in some of the literature, you would see this plant would be used quite extensively from Texas to Boston, but you didn't see a lot of phenotypic variation. And in fact, the literature would sort of divide it into what we would misapplication of ecotype, but a southern form or southern ecotype and a northern ecotype. And this represents the southern form. And so the hypothesis, we'll move on into the map here. We'll get into that in a second. But so here's the distribution of Kynanthus retusus. So where was this variation that we were seeing, or lack of variation in the United States, coming from? We know that in 1845, Robert Fortune was the first to describe Kynanthus retusus. He actually picked up potted plants in southeast China, brought them back. This is in the corner here, the actual, which will soon be the type. It's not actually the type. That's another paper where another manuscript where we'll annotate with Dr. Kirkbride some new taxonomy in the genus, but this is what will be the type from Robert Fortune's collecting trip, and you can see here in southeast China. And then all in red would be the distribution, and here's Korea up to about 900 meters in China down to the coast, in Korea down to the coast, and then one population here in a relict population in Japan, and of course down, and you also have it in Taiwan. In that population in 1845 in the English literature disappeared. It was no longer extant by the turn of the 20th century. It was considered lost. And the new population that was introduced into England and then ultimately the United States came from a Veitch collection, Marie's collection in China. And that was introduced in England, but we didn't know about the extent of it into the United States. Most literature points to a 1901 accession from Tokyo at Arnold Arboretum as the first introduction in the United States. This is from a relict population, and then from this is what most people would consider plants of Chinese fringe tree in the United States originated from. We also had an unheralded explorer, Frank Meyer. A lot of you know him, but he doesn't get the credit for ornamentals that he deserves, like his colleague E.H. Wilson from Arnold. But Frank Meyer collected, it's hard to pinpoint exactly where he collected it, but basically southeast of Beijing, but northeast China in 1907. He actually had a subsequent collection as well. So the question was, what do we have in cultivation, and where does it come from? And as a breeder, what do we have to work with, and where would we go? So what's in cultivation, the cultivated gene pools? Our hypothesis was that commercially available Kynanthus retusus is represented by a narrow gene pool derived from limited initial introductions. And we wanted to use, in order to test this, molecular markers to screen an extensive sampling, as much as we can get around the United States, to one, quantify the genetic diversity, what's available in the cultivated germplasm, assess the number and relationships between sources. Again, we're a repository, so we'd like to know what we have, is it diverse, and then identify gaps and opportunities for collecting or breeding efforts. Materials and methods. So, well, slow down, hold on. Okay, so we were able to collect, we started this in 2008, collecting samples, and we actually got our last sample in the end of 2012. That was a very important sample. So some of you may have seen part of this research before, but we did add a couple new samples since 2011. So we started with 63 from around the country. We collected from the collections that we known wild provenance, as well as some duplicates as internal controls, and then also commercially available, and then a lot of unknown provenances from throughout the country to see how they would group. And of course, we used the related Kynanthus as an outgroup, sort of, to see where they might fall, because they're still kind of interesting and questionable. So from 2008 to 2011, we worked with Rene Arias at and Brian Scheffler's lab and USDA to develop the SSR markers. She did a great job, identified a lot of polymorphic markers for all of Kynanthus. And so we started with about 195 after that paper, and 57 of those that were polymorphic in Kynanthus retusus were also polymorphic in Kynanthus virginicus and Cartrema americana. And so after that, we built on the protocols from the 2011 paper and used Tim's well-published used protocols for SSRs. And we used the ABI 3130 and ROCKS down at Poplarville and GeneMapper to call the peaks. You guys know all this. We start with 100 SSR loci from that paper. We used allele sharing distance for the phonetic analysis and populations, neighbor joining trees with the 100 bootstrap replicates. We did a principal coordinate analysis and used Nye's estimator for heterozygosity. And then we wanted to use structure to actually assess what were the relationships, or how many clusters did we actually have, and see if that really matched up with the phonetic analysis and morphology. What I haven't told you and you won't see today is that for every sample that we collected, we made multiple herbarium specimens to be able to compare the morphology in these populations to the molecular work. So I'll sort of hint at that later. But we used the delta K, which has been shown to be a better estimator of the number of optimal populations or clusters. I encourage you to see Evan's paper on that. So results and discussion. For the SSRs, of those 100 SSRs that we published previously, 71 of them we ultimately moved forward with. 29 of them had too much stutter and low amplification, so they didn't work well for us. That was probably due to the large number of dinucleotide repeats that we used. In Renee's work, the process that she used to identify the SSR has really pulled out a lot of dinucleotides. We would have liked to have a larger pool of tri and tetranucleotide repeats. But this is just a quick synopsis of the allelic data. We did a good job with the loci. The number of alleles here ranged from 2 to 24. The mean was 8.7, and more than 40% were greater than the mean. Observed heterozygosity, the average, where we range from 0.02 to 0.7, the average is 0.35. This is actually a little low compared to other woody clonal crops. We'll get into that in a second. And then the expected heterozygosity. We had pretty good polymorphic informative content, and then a number of no alleles. So two of the loci we kept in that sort of account for some of the low numbers on the range. They didn't show differences in, wow, really? They didn't show differences in Kenanthus retusus, but they did in the outgroup, so we kept them in. And we had, you know, here's the numbers on the loci deviating from Hardy-Weinberger. And let's get going. So principal core analysis, we looked first to start looking at the groups. We have pretty much two large clusters on the left and on the right. And we can start, these colors will correspond with the next couple of slides on their geographical origin. So we started to see some clustering that made sense with our data and our provenance work. And again, this is the delta K for the optimal. We went with 7 there, the high peak. So let's get into this. This is the more interesting stuff. So here's our tree. And these are the clusters that were identified by structure. Structure identified two subgroups. These two subgroups that our phonetic analysis or our bootstrapping wouldn't necessarily have pulled out. And the purple is the original wild collected material, as well as material that we recently resurrected a new PI based on our records from a forgotten garden of the original Frank Meyer collection. So this is clustering very nicely with what we know. That there's now commercial seed sources in the United States from China, and that's in. So the purple is historic, the yellow is actually new stuff from China. So that's clustering pretty well. What's interesting is we have Toshima Island, a small island between Japan and Korea. We have two wild collections from there. But what's interesting is that in a recent introduction from Japan, Tokyo Tower, a new cultivar, comes from this population. So we now have a. This population is now represented in cultivation. But what we found mostly in the south, this southern ecotype, is stuff that we were able to track back to Taiwan, an original introduction from 1931. This is where we found the most duplicates of being spread. Some of these are, one of these is a known clone, but it was named after it was discovered. So it was distributed long before it had a clonal name. And that's the southern ecotype. This is an interesting group. We don't know what really to make of it. This is wild collected material from Korea and also seed distributed from Kunming Botanic Gardens in Yunnan. They have similar morphology, similar phenotype, but it, again, you wouldn't expect necessarily that they would cluster together, so we don't know what Kunming was actually distributing. And this is what we would call the northern ecotype in the United States that's been passed around. This is the original 1901 introduction from Japan, and you can see from these low these branch lengths that it's a really sort of inbred pool. There's a limited distribution here, and it's represented best by what is now a clone in the United States called Arnold's Promise. And then what was really exciting was we found the original Veitch material that was left buried in a forgotten botanic garden or park in Rochester, New York, and through serendipity and plant records we were able to find out that this introduction from 1886 actually was still around, but you can see it's not really contributed to the cultivated gene pool. So I guess I'm done, so I want to get to this. You sure? Tim's not here. I can talk in the next 20 minutes. I would say we have a broad base in cultivation, but narrow deployment. So it's really restricted to this Taiwanese material in the south, and now just really one clone of that Taiwanese material. And then the original Japanese material, which is now one clone. So the classic story of a narrow introduction and then horticulture finding a clone and running with it. And then we do have this persistent Chinese material and now a new wave of Chinese material. So really we'll have three provenances in the United States now. And this becomes important for other things, but I want to leave with this, is there is a new disease that has jumped host. This is a Discula fraxinae. It's native to North America on our ash trees, and it has jumped host and is now found on Ceanthus retusus, a plant we once thought was indestructible. So we'll be able to look at this data and move forward. So thank you.
Can you tell us more about the genus Tartrema, and are they closely allied species with Tartrema, you know, what's now Tartrema maritima?
Yeah, so Tom's question is, what is Tartrema and what is it from, more or less? Tartrema, so Osmanthus is the one of the genus in the subtribe that is really confusing. There's a lot of Australasian stuff, Southeast Asian stuff, and then we have disjunct Osmanthus in Eastern Europe or the Western Asia and North America. And the North American species, Osmanthus americanus, has been pulled out based on recent molecular work. It does cluster separately from all the Osmanthus. It does cluster closer to Ceanthus virginicus, actually. And one of our goals, which we weren't able to get to, and we'll have to turn this over to a taxonomist and use different sequencing and other better markers and SSRs for this, is what are all the relationships within Ceanthus and Osmanthus, and then what would you breed with? And Tartrema americana, or Osmanthus americanus, is very interesting because it's a hexaploid and everything else is a diploid. So, and from a breeding standpoint, it's interesting because it is extremely cold hardy evergreen. So, it's now recognized in the flora of the Carolinas as Tartrema. So,
where do you come from in the United States? Can you go south Florida, like Florida, up north, or are you just in cold climate?
Yeah, John Reuter and Gary Knox. So the question is, how far can you go? There's a great one in Gainesville. One of these samples is actually from Gainesville via John Reuter when he was there. So Gary may have left, but there's a very nice Taiwanese form of Ceanthus retusus in Gainesville. So, and it does very well. No, the only value we've seen in the literature is that the new shoots have been used as a vegetable in China. And so this is an interesting tree. This is an early OP hybrid from Arnold from their Japanese selection that actually incorporated Veitch material. Arnold had Veitch material, ultimately lost it. But this is one plant that shows as a hybrid between Veitch material and Arnold material. It's a very upright tree. It's very nice. This is the original PI we discovered in David Fairchild's original garden in Maryland. David Fairchild, of course, was the head of USDA plant, the founder, really, of the USDA Plant Exploration Office. And this was Frank Meyer's original collection. So we've got that. This is in Nacogdoches, Texas. This is, again, the Taiwanese form. They're really indestructible. They've done very well in all of the droughts that Texas has had. That's it in flower. That's our taxonomist. This is the Taiwanese shape. So this is the southern ecotype. It's always round. You only find this in Taiwanese material. It was originally described as a separate species or variety. Those characters don't hold up. But the phenotype is definitely different. You don't see this in any other material from Japan, Korea, or China. So this is from an endemic population in Taiwan, and I think maybe should be revisited as to what its infraspecific taxis status should be. This is the ivory tower clone from Toshima Island, Tokyo Tower. This is a Taiwanese form in the background. The Toshima Island form is really nice because it has purplish new growth, and the petals are much wider. So we've sort of did lazy breeding here and just let them, this is an isolation block, so we've collected seed off to hopefully combine those traits. The Korean material is very interesting, exfoliating bark like a river birch. A lot of Ceanthus will do that when it's young, but this variety from Korea does it even when it's old, and this material is not in the trade. This is only in the Arnold Arboretum's collections, and we have a couple related collections at the National Arboretum. So even though this is why I say it's a broad base but narrow deployment, the Botanic Gardens have done a good job of sort of sampling, but that hasn't translated to the nursery industry. So, you know, Botanic Gardens are a very good reservoir for ornamentals. This is very interesting, and I guess because Tim's not here, I can get into it. But You guys can leave if you don't want to. This, it's very interesting because this seed was received at the National Arboretum the year I was born. I always like to say that. And this is the stuff from Kunming. And there's actually two phenotypes that arose out of this seed we got. There's this very upright vase-shaped form, and that's over here as well. And you see this. And then in the background, down the hill, you have very round squat forms, much like the Taiwanese material. But most Kynanthus retusus is actually wider than it is tall. And this is one that we've made a selection of as an urban tree, because this is very upright. It would be good for more narrow environments. We've actually sent this out to a propagator in Tennessee, and they can't believe the vigor. Alex has it hidden hollow. Thank you, Tom. So very nice. It has very large leaves for a Kynanthus retusus. It's really bizarre, but we don't know what's going on with this material that came from Kunming. And when I was in Beijing in November, we saw the same thing at their Institute of Botany, an upright phenotype and then a row of these broad phenotypes. And it doesn't really split out in the SSR or the structure analysis. They're all together. They just happen to have two different phenotypes. So these upright forms are not really in cultivation, so we're pretty excited about that. If you want to see that again, but the acknowledgments I didn't get to. Again, well, none of this would have been possible without ARS collaborators, Jennifer Carroll in Tim's lab, and then Renee and Brian. I think Renee is now in USDA in Georgia somewhere. Renee Arias, I think. FONA, Friends of the National Arboretum Project Funding, and to go to the Chinese Academy of Sciences. We did a whole herbarium side that you don't see in this. And then some people in this room and others have really, we did a good job of calling in favors from around the country to get these samples. So any more questions, just shoot them out. But otherwise, you got some time.
One last question. Can you comment on the status of Kynanthus pubescens?
Right.
Unfortunately,
that sample got lost in the freezer. We had that, and we were going to include it. When we finally got down to looking at the data, I was like, "Well, where's the pubescens sample?" Well, so Tom asked the question about the status of Kynanthus pubescens. It's a southwestern South American species of Kynanthus. It would have been a Linus Sierra. It's native to sort of summer dry deciduous habitats on western South America, but it has shocking pink flowers. And so the thought was, we don't have pink in Kynanthus. Let's use this. So we haven't gotten there, and I'm not sure SSRs would be the best way to do that. But there is also in the repository here in Florida, Alan Miro Tomas, I don't know if Tomas is here, they have a couple Caribbean Lino Sierra. So the problem, Tom, has been the Lino Sierra just typically aren't in cultivation. So if you wanted to do a study with all these other species, you just can't find them. I mean, you'd have to go collect them yourself. They're just not. They have very small flowers, not very showy, so never really has come on anyone's radar before, other than this Kynanthus pubescens.
So you're originally introduced as a single seed?
It looks like the Tokyo one ended up being, the question was the original introduction, and I think that depends on which original introduction, but It appears that all of the original introductions were limited seed. The Veitch collection could have been larger, because Veitch was a large commercial nursery in England, and they sent collectors to China and other parts of the world, and they typically tried to collect large quantities. But I think this is one of those plants that hasn't really done very well in England. It's not mentioned a lot because it really would require more heat. So I think most of the Veitch materials in England is probably gone. I've talked to colleagues, and they just don't see much in England of any Kynanthus. So I think they were all narrow originally. The broadest probably would have been the USDA stuff that got distributed. It was distributed in the 1920s by the USDA, and there's a very famous horticulturist in Philadelphia called Horace McFarland. He pretty much had the first mail order specialty nursery in the United States. He was also great promoter of himself and publications and photographs, and he distributed for years USDA material. But by the 1960s in the popular literature, everyone says this is a great plant, but you never see it. So it just never caught on, and then it. So that Chinese material, I don't think really ever, it persisted in botanical collections. It never really made much headway in the industry until now. So we really got stuck with just a little bit from Japan and China, Taiwan. And that material from Taiwan ended up being only four plants by the 1970s. So you had that very narrow introduction.
Anybody has questions for the other presenters? I don't know if Kesenji is here. No. I think so. We have to wait until 11:45, so we have 3 minutes break. You can just go to the bathroom or something until the next person. Thank you.